getting enough sleep during the pandemic, and always. How have you been sleeping lately? If your answer is not great, you are not alone. Millions of people already suffered with insomnia before the COVID-19 pandemic, but now, by all measures, it's even worse. There are many reasons for this. Daily life and normal routines have been disrupted. Most of us are feeling some level of anxiety and worry, and many are experiencing depression and isolation. It's tough, but it's also really important to try to get enough good sleep. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with medical experts about how sleep is integrated with overall mental and physical health and ways to foster healthy sleep patterns. We'll also find out about the pandemic's effect on dreaming. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Today, sleep and your physical and mental health, and how sleep can be affected by stressful times like these. My guest, Dr. Robert McCarley, who is Vice President of Medical Affairs for Intensive Services at Maine Behavioral Healthcare and Spring Harbor Hospital, and Dr. Alexander Videnovich, who is Director of Sleep Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital. We invite your questions and comments. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for joining us today for this program. I know so many people, including myself, I confess, have not been sleeping the same. And Dr. Videnovich, let me start with you. The sleep problems that people have been having since the start of the pandemic are so common that there is now a name for it, coronasomnia. Have you seen a definitive rise in sleep problems in your sleep clinic, and what kind of problems are you seeing the most?
Good morning, Jennifer, and good morning to all of your listeners as well. And yes, definitely, it turns that we have a new disorder called coronasomnia, and really, it is a reflective of the situation that we are all in since the beginning of this year. My short answer to your question is definitively yes. We have seen a rise of both sleep complaints and diagnosis of insomnias and some certain other primary sleep disorders since the onset of the insomnia. And considering that our entire lives have been changed and kind of reshaped by this terrible pandemic, that's kind of something that we who deal with the sleep medicine and take care of sleep patients have expected and kind of have been prepared for the surge of these sleep problems in the population.
So tell us, when you say insomnia, are people just staying up all night? Are people waking up in the middle of the night? 3 a.m. seems to be my time, and not able to go back to sleep. What are you seeing?
Well, when we speak about insomnia and specifically related to COVID, I'd say that we see different types of complaints. Some patients really have a hard time falling asleep. Some individuals are repetitively waking up throughout the night and having challenges to go back to sleep. But I would say it's not only insomnia at nighttime that suffers. We see some rise in excessive sleepiness during the daytime, and also shifts in our normal bodily rhythm, which we call circadian system. So we see circadian rhythm disorders and circadian abnormalities as well. So the spectrum of the problem is, I would say, very, very broad.
Dr. McCarley, lay the foundation for us. How does sleep benefit our physical and mental health? What is happening in our bodies when we sleep? What do we know now that maybe we didn't know 10 or 20 years ago?
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate it. And So sleep is such an interesting thing. It is so much is so newly discovered, and then so much of it is kind of a mystery. Currently, kind of when we think about sleep, I always think about it as primarily a restorative function, as well as having some preventative health benefits. And in terms of kind of the restorative function, some things that we've recently been working on, looking at things like the clearance of toxic proteins such as amyloid, related to the lymphatic system that we've kind of talked about recently, associated with sleep, cellular repair related to oxidative stress damage potentially, brain energy stores and kind of associated adenosine relationship with sleep, so that that happens at night. And really looking at their synaptic strengths for kind of memory processes, which are both formed and strengthened at nighttime, where are really kind of key things which occur in the evenings. The kind of common sense things that I find kind of most interesting is that sleep and a lack of sleep is associated with a number of kind of physical health problems that we see, everything from cardiovascular risk factors of atherosclerosis, heart-related problems, problems related to stroke, weight gain and obesity, diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and immunosuppressive relationships. So it's good for our immune system to get enough sleep, and not good if you don't. And of course, I'm a psychiatrist, and one of the things that we clearly see tied to sleep is mental health relationships, and depression, anxiety, and more serious mental illnesses such as bipolar illness have a clear sleep relationship. It's really correlational, and the more sleeping problems, the more we see associated depression and anxiety and other problems associated with this. And we also see sleeping problems as a symptom of these illnesses in themselves. And I think the last thing that makes so much sense, but it's so important for us to think about, is kind of the cognitive processes that sleep benefits us to have in the daytime. Good decision making and information processing happens better when we've had a full night's sleep, and when we don't, it's impaired, right? Everyone knows that if you read, if you hear about things like operating heavy machinery or driving a car, if you've been sleepless, people are much more likely to get into an accident, to miss a light, something like that. And therefore, kind of in times where we're stressed, we're not sleeping, we have problems like anxiety or depression. And in the daytime, it's so important for us to be making good choices and to be able to think these things through, especially in kind of COVID times. It's an especially important process.
Dr. McCarley, you used the expression a full night's sleep. I know that is perpetually up for debate. What is your guidance that you give patients and friends about what is a good night's sleep?
Sure. Patients, friends, and children, all of those things we talk about all the time. For years as an outpatient psychiatrist, I always told my patients, and for adults 18 to 65, I usually say 6 to 8 hours sleep. I actually looked it up, and there was a consensus statement, which is a group of experts from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, recently stated 7 hours sleep, which is right in the middle of that, is what individuals should really look for. If you're younger, though, having more sleep is much more important. We're all aware that adolescents can sleep and should sleep a little bit more. And as you get younger, and for children, it's even more important. So usually somewhere between 8 and 12 hours for younger children, adolescents usually 6 to 10 hours, something like that.
Okay, so now for the $64,000 question, maybe the $1 million question, I'm going to ask both of you. Dr. Vidanovic, I'll go first to you, which is, okay, some tips. Here we are in the middle of a historic pandemic. There's anxiety and worry and isolation, and our daily pattern has been thrown off. The future is uncertain. How do we try and get enough sleep given all of that?
Sure. So a very relevant question probably to all of us. And I think that we need to put the entire 24-hour period in the context when we talk about this. We cannot separate the daytime function from a good night of sleep. So I would say that we really need to pay a lot of attention. What do we do during the daytime, especially nowadays, as you pointed out, when our routines and schedules have been substantially broken and have been messed up? Your question related to mainly to the night sleep, right? So during the COVID, it's even more important that we adhere to good sleep hygiene habits that we would normally recommend for good night of sleep, even in most ideal times. I think it is several tips that one needs to consider is that we should really try to go to bed and get up the same time as we usually do. We should try to eliminate the worry if possible. Make a list maybe of concerns that we have before we hit a pillow and the bed sheets and say, okay, I have written all my questions and all my worries that I need to think about, and I will worry about that when I wake up refreshed the following day. I think it is really very important to try to avoid and minimize napping during the day if possible, because that is going to diminish our normal sleep drive that we would have if we don't nap. And I think we should really try to eliminate a lot of activating activities just before bedtime, try to avoid strenuous exercise, make sure that we are not exposing ourselves to a lot of screen time just before bedtime. So these would be some habits. These would be some habits that would be important as we prepare to go to bed. We want to be in a soothing, relaxing atmosphere before we approach that bedroom. And then probably good transition. I'm going to let my colleague comment maybe what we should do when we go to sleep and when we are already in the bed and when we are unable to sleep. Maybe this would be a good transition. So I'm going to let my colleague speak about that second part, what happens after we cannot go to bed and how do we improve, if we cannot go to sleep actually, and how we improve our chances for a good restful night of sleep.
Dr. McCarley.
Well, I appreciate that setup. So first of all, I couldn't agree more with what Dr. Vianovich shared in terms of good, what we call sleep hygiene. That consistent bedtime and awake time is so important, avoiding screen time. It's wonderful. He listed a number of cognitive behavioral therapy. There's a CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy for sleep that people can do. And he shared a number of those techniques that we try to do to kind of leave your worries behind. So when you lie down to sleep, just to add a couple more things to avoid. Caffeine, it sounds obvious, but we want to avoid caffeine 6 hours before we want to go to sleep. It has a long half-life and can kind of kick in and can really contribute. And I always say to avoid alcohol, too. A lot of people who have trouble sleeping fall into the habit of having a drink or two to try to fall asleep, thinking that that'll help them. But it actually interferes with sleep architecture. It can cause you to wake up at night and have less good quality sleep. So that's some of the other things I might share. If you are lying in bed and you can't sleep, so you've done all these things, you've avoided your screen time, and you can't sleep, so what do you do next? So one of the things that we always state is try not to lie in bed just struggling with the inability to sleep for an excessive period of time, because what you don't want to do is associate bed with stress, right? You don't want to associate it with worry that you're just not going to be able to sleep or going through things. So I usually talk to my patients that after 20 or 30 minutes, if you've been lying there and you can't sleep, get up, walk around, do something else calming and soothing for 15 or 20 minutes, and then go back to bed and lie down and try to get some sleep. The other thing is we want to associate bed with sleep. So we always say that bed should only be for sleeping and sex, and nothing else. So you're not going to avoid sex ultimately in the long term. But other things, you don't have to do work in bed. You don't have to watch TV in bed. You don't have to have your meals in bed. So many of us during COVID, you know, one of the convenience factors of life at COVID is that you can do everything from bed probably. You can do phone. You sometimes can work from bed. But what we really want to do is associate that with a relaxing time and to sleep. And so to try to keep that process right there. make sure your room is dark so that you have all the blinds down, that you have lights turned off, and you have a quiet place as well.
Tips for people who might be working from home and actually have a table or a desk in their bedroom.
Well, you know, I would state the obvious. If you're sleeping fine and it's not a problem, fantastic. Then, of course, it's common sense. It's not an issue. But if you are having difficulty sleeping, and if you have a stressful job, and I don't know about you, Jennifer, but I'm going to guess we all have pretty stressful jobs at this point, that maybe doing that work and associating working and sitting in bed together isn't a good thing. And maybe you move that space and so that when you work, you're in a different room, or if you only had one room, to a different section of the room so you're not in bed.
Dr. Vidanovich, I want to ask you about something else people have been noticing during COVID, which is vivid dreams. What is going on? Why are we dreaming so vividly?
Dreams are really fascinating concept as a biology phenomenon, and usually we some of us, as you know, Jennifer, maybe you do recall, maybe you don't recall your dreams. Personally, myself, I can rarely recall my dreams, but certainly what I have noticed, if my sleep is really not all that consolidated, if I wake up, and if I happen to wake up suddenly from a certain stage of sleep that is associated with dreaming, I have a higher chance that I may recall my dreams. And just a few days ago, I woke up very early in the morning, and that's where our dreaming mainly tends to occur. Dreams try to intensify in content as the night of sleep progresses. And to go back, I woke up, I had a very unpleasant dream. I had a perfect recollection of this dream, very unusual for me. So what I'd say is that the more you wake up throughout the nighttime, and insomnia certainly is characterized by these repeated awakenings, the chance that you may recall your dream goes higher. And certainly in these difficult times, if there is a lot of anxiety and worry about our jobs, our health, of our loved ones, and sometimes those that are far away from us, we are really kind of predisposing ourselves maybe to have some of those worries as we go to bed and sleep, and then that carries maybe perhaps throughout the night. That coupled with the increased frequency of awakenings increases our chances that we may have these bad dreams. Of course, there are sleep disorders that are characterized by this vivid dreaming, and some of them have really negative emotions associated with it, such as fear and anger. Some of these disorders, one is, for example, a nightmare disorder, can be quite disturbing for patients and their bed partners. And so far, I wouldn't say that we have seen increased number of nightmare disorders per se, but certainly I believe that there is a tendency among my patients that they report they are dreaming more and more, and some of them may really find that disturbing. But I also want to, at this point, mention something to put some silver lining, or I guess some positive connotations to our conversation so far, that we all should kind of embrace and recognize that some individuals actually sleep better since this pandemic started. Not everything is so gloomy and dark. We certainly need to educate ourselves about challenges of sleeping healthy in the COVID-19 era. But some folks really have a more relaxed day ahead of them. They don't have to commute to get to work. They can take breaks in between their telework responsibilities they do on a daily basis. They are surrounding with their loved ones in a house. And so I wouldn't say that everyone sleeps deteriorated. Some people sleep as good as they did, or as bad as they did before. some sleep better, but certainly a large portion of us also struggle with somewhat worse sleep than we had a year ago, for example.
And people have more time in their 24-hour cycle just because many people still have to work, but those who are working from home have more time because they're not commuting. We do have to take a quick break. We're talking about sleeping and what people are calling coronasomnia. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, inviting you to learn about Maine's Holocaust survivors at the Michael Clarr Center in Augusta. And Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com. As Election Day nears, a reminder about the weekly Maine's Political Pulse podcast and the Maine Political Pulse newsletter. Both are available online at mainepublic.org, but you can also have the Political Pulse newsletter delivered straight to your inbox on Friday mornings. You can subscribe to the Political Pulse newsletter right now at mainepublic.org/pulse, or by clicking the mainepublic.org news dropdown at the top of the page and then selecting Maine Political Pulse. The Maine Public News Your Vote 2020 debates are available to see anytime at mainepublic.org. Maine Public Television will also rebroadcast all three of them this evening. The Senate debate at 8, the 2nd District Congressional debate at 9, and the 1st District Congressional debate at 10. That's coming up this evening on Maine Public Television and always available online and on demand at mainepublic.org. Note also that Maine Public Radio will rebroadcast the 2nd Congressional debate right here tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the role that sleep plays in our overall health and how sleep for many has been disrupted during the pandemic. My guest, Dr. Alexander Vidanovich, Director of Sleep Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital, and Dr. Robert McCarley, Vice President of Medical Affairs for Intensive Services at Maine Behavioral Health and Spring Harbor Hospital. Share your comments or questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, Dr. Hannah Taylor, who is a clinical psychologist and behavioral sleep medicine provider at the Maine Sleep Center and Chest Medicine Associates in South Portland. Thanks for calling in, Hannah.
Sure. Hi, Jennifer.
I understand you specialize in helping people with chronic insomnia. What's the difference between chronic insomnia and regular insomnia?
Sure. So chronic insomnia is really, you know, this difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep and the associated daytime effects, but not just for, you know, a day or a week or two, but really this insomnia that persists for as long as months or in some cases even years.
When there's not a pandemic happening, what are some of the primary factors that might lead to chronic insomnia?
So I think a lot of the points that have been made already by your other panelists contribute. Disruption in, you know, the consistency of one's sleep patterns, worry or anxiety are all very common contributors. We are seeing, of course, a lot of this with the pandemic. I think with chronic insomnia, too, what begins to happen is what, you know, may have started as sort of an acute issue, maybe in response to a stressor someone had in their life, really starts to snowball into a more chronic issue, a bigger issue. And, you know, when someone has been having stress about something in particular, when that stressor resolves, their insomnia may improve as well. But if this goes on for a long period of time, well, sleep itself becomes something that is a stressor. Someone may be putting a lot of pressure on their sleep or understandably worrying about their sleep, and that can perpetuate the issue.
Sure. It's sort of a chicken or egg issue it becomes at some point,
absolutely,
I imagine. What are some of the ways you help patients improve their sleep habits?
So I usually do something called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, which has been pointed out already in the show. So we abbreviate this CBTI. And I think this is really important to mention because, you know, we have this focused, time-limited therapy that has a great, you know, scientific evidence base behind it. We know that this is effective and that patients can benefit from this. So usually I'm working patients through this process to sort of help them understand how their sleep system works, help them understand what, you know, behavioral patterns or thinking patterns that they have going on that might be contributing to this ongoing issue.
You've already heard some of the conversation about ideas for helping people get sleep. What would you add to that?
I think a lot of great points have been made. You know, separating wakefulness and worry from the bed is very key. You want to have your bed or bedroom be this place that is associated with sleep. You know, a lot of my patients find themselves going to bed and then feeling keyed up rather than relaxed because this is a place that has been paired with wakefulness or frustration or anxiety. So as hard as it is, I tell people it really is important to, yeah, get up at night if you're really feeling wide awake and stressed. I think, you know, sort of preemptively working through worry is important. So yes, having that slip of paper by the side of the bed, but I think it can also be helpful, especially during such stressful times, for people to schedule time in their day in advance of bedtime when they might allow some of that worry, or they might allow planning or organizing or seeking social support that might help them be, you know, better set up at night to have a relaxed body and mind.
And Dr. Taylor, before we let you go, I understand you are not only a doctor helping people with chronic insomnia, but you are living what we're reading about. You're balancing small children and a pandemic and work. What are you doing for yourself that you are sharing with patients to help us all navigate this time we're in?
Yes, this is an atypical year for everyone in one way or another. And, you know, I think parents definitely have the added challenge right now of having to consider their children's, you know, schooling, their mental health and their physical health and safety all at once. I think it's very easy for parents right now with all the, you know, there are various situations people are in, but I think there is a particularly high set of demands for parents right now. I think it's pretty easy to sort of cut sleep short. To sort of, you know, oh, the house is quiet. This is finally my chance to get a few other things done or to check in on your own emotional needs during such a stressful time. And I would just, you know, echo to myself and to other parents that, you know, like others have said, our sleep is very important and is a buffer between stress and our mental health as well as our physical health. So to really set aside time at night to help yourself wind down, detach, but then prioritize sleep as well. Get that needed rest.
All right. Well, Hannah, thank you so much. Dr. Hannah Taylor, a psychologist with Maine Sleep Center at Chest Medicine Associates, specializing in chronic insomnia. I really appreciate you calling into the program. We're going to start now with an email from Norm. Is it recommended to read in bed and then turn off the light to go to sleep? Dr. Vidanovich.
Well, I would say that I don't necessarily put that as the recommendation prior to the bedtime, but I certainly want to recognize that the reading can be a very soothing experience, and we all have different experiences that that soothe us and that relax us. So if a lot of my patients do that, it really transitions them very nicely. They're reading a nice book or a novel or a poem, transitions them very nicely from an active day to a good night of sleep. And certainly this is something that an individual enjoys if it doesn't interfere with the good sleep hygiene, going to bed on time, et cetera. I think it can be a very rewarding experience in achieving a good night of sleep.
All right. A message here from Lucy. What do you think of sleep aid and meditation apps like Headspace? Dr. McCarley.
Oh, that's a great question. So I'm making some notes about some actual actions that people can take for sleep. So I think those sleep aids and meditation are fantastic, actually. There's a series of them that you can do, anything from progressive muscle relaxation, which you can teach yourself and you can do, to there's a variety of applications. And I've downloaded a couple just to listen to. And I think that they're all quite good. And I think some of the nice things is you don't have to have a light on. You can listen to just a voice, do it, and you can either just play it or you can wear headphones if you can sleep with those. And I think that they're terrific. And if I could add a couple of other things, Jennifer, I took some notes and I just wanted to add, because people often ask, well, what can I do to help myself sleep? And I had written down So one of the things in Maine, we often have get a lot more darkness here, as people know, and so seasonal affective disorder is a real thing that can cause depression and sleeping issues. So the use of a light box, they're inexpensive. You can buy them online, usually for around $50. And even for folks who don't necessarily have an officially diagnosed seasonal affective disorder, to use a light box first thing in the morning can help establish your sleep-wake cycle, help you feel better, and can help sleep a little bit. And I can talk about that some more if people are interested. Exercise in the daytime. Dr. Vendovich, I think, said accurately, you don't want to necessarily do it just at bedtime, but to get some exercise in the daytime is incredibly helpful. Sometimes using a sleep aid, I'm not a big fan of regular sleep aids, but if you're going to use something, sometimes some over-the-counter melatonin tends to be helpful for sleep initiation or falling asleep and isn't habit-forming, and that's something that people find helpful. And last, I just wanted to add, I was laughing at Dr. Taylor's children. I have five kids. And one of my children said to me, "Dad, are you going to talk about getting a dog?" Because she's just in love. We have a Bernese Mountain Dog. And it's so helpful for so many people. As we all know that during this pandemic, people have gotten tons of dogs. It can be very helpful for anxiety and for stress and for exercise in the daytime. Anyone who has taken their dog for a walk on a regular basis knows that it gets you outside, can be very helpful. And a lot of people have found that useful.
All right. Well, we'll go to Ella.
Go ahead. Jennifer, this is a great segue. Dr. McCarley has really gave us all a terrific advice and has really emphasized on the importance about talking about the daytime function as well for the sake of good night of sleep. And I'd like to introduce the concept to your to all of your listeners of our internal timing system and our body clock. We all house our internal timing instrument, our body clock, deep inside of our brain. There is about 10,000 nerve cells that act as our own internal clock. What does that internal clock do? Well, it times all other physiological processes within our body, including our sleep and wake cycles. And it really helps us align with the rotation of the earth so that we really understand when is the daytime that we should get up and when is the nighttime when we should go to bed. And really that sunlight or outdoor light is a major stimulus, major connector between outside world and our internal clock that resides in our brain. So that's why it's really very important that we consciously make a separation between our day and our night. And that is becoming a little bit harder during a pandemic when in times where we really don't have a so well-structured schedule of our day. So Dr. McCarley mentioned how that light box can be very helpful for example, for seasonal affective disorder. It is also very critical that now during a pandemic when we are really confined inside the house where we may not get enough sunlight exposure, that we go outside, that we expose ourselves to natural light, especially very early, immediately after we wake up in the morning. Believe it or not, timing of our meals also can substantially influence our internal timing. So I would also suggest that we keep our meals around the same time each day, that we exercise around the same time, and that we kind of introduce really specific schedules and routines to our day, because that's going to strengthen our rhythm of our normal day, and it's going to allow us to transition better to good night of sleep, because our clock, our brain is not going to be confused by a relative monotony of what we do and how we do things during the daytime. So I think this aspect is a key to a good night of sleep.
All right. We'll go to Ellery calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Thank you. A wonderful show, as always. In relation to COVID-19, I'm helping several shut-ins, doing grocery shopping, picking up mail, prescriptions, et cetera. So with that, it's bringing a sense of peace. That helps me sleep in a way. But when I cannot sleep, I often write notes. And my impression is that when I wake up in the morning, by having written a note in the evening, it's like I'm clearing my head and I'm ready to start where I left off the night before. But what's actually happening there? Is my blood pressure changing? Is my brain chemistry being affected by something going on? How does that work? Why does that work?
Ooh, Dr. McCarley, do you know the answer?
I don't know if I do. So first of all, I was just going to say, well, thank you so much for everything you're doing in Waterville. Boy, what a wonderful thing reaching out to folks who can't get out. And I'm glad it brings you some peace. Boy, when we can't sleep at night, when we wake up, and whether it's dreams or just you wake up, we often recommend just taking a moment. And if you have a thought, keeping a sleep diary or having a dream diary, or even just a thought diary next to the bed. And sometimes that helps people just to record it, kind of gives them some comfort that they don't have to kind of work to remember it, that it's written down. And it's really fascinating in the morning for many people to take a look at it. In terms of your physiology and what's going on, you know, I'm not sure. Sleep in general tends to calm our physiology, right? We have a decreased heart rate, decreased respiratory rate. But that's my best answer. But I'm going to say whatever you're doing, it seems to be working. So don't stop.
Ellery, thank you so much for your call. And we do have to take another quick break. We're talking about sleeping well during the pandemic and always. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from St. Mary's Health System Orthopedics, offering comprehensive orthopedic care in Portland and Auburn. stmarysortho.com, and AltE Store, providing solar power, battery backup equipment, and advice to solar installers and do-it-yourselfers. AltEStore.com.
Hundreds of female Pepperell Mill employees participated in Biddeford and Saco's National Recovery Administration Parade on October 29, 1933. The Pepperell Manufacturing Company was a cotton textile mill which operated at the Saco River Falls in Biddeford for 100 years, from 1849 to 1949. The workers marched down Main Street in Biddeford, headed toward the Main Street Bridge and Saco. The NRA was part of the New Deal, which brought together labor, industry, and government to help in the recovery efforts by reducing destructive competition practices. Biddeford and Saco's businesses joined to show their solidarity and support of these efforts in this huge parade.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of DN Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine!
I'm Tanya Mosley. Alexandra Pelosi spent the past year talking to people across the country for her latest film. And she says the U.S. is very divided ahead of the election.
People already say, oh, it's going to be a landslide. And I say, you have not left Manhattan in a long time. I know the coronavirus has prevented people from traveling, but it seems like everybody's sort of insulated.
That's next time on Here and Now.
And that's coming up today at noon here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, factors that lead to poor sleep and what to do about it. Joining me, Dr. Robert McCarley with Maine Behavioral Health Care and Dr. Alexander Vidanovich with Massachusetts General Hospital. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I got an email that came in from Linville. I am a 16-year-old student. High school student diagnosed with bipolar and have always been aware of my sleeping habits. This year, because of COVID, I go to school every other day and have to wake up at different times. What do you recommend for me and others in my situation to stabilize our sleep? Dr. McCarley.
I was going to say, that's my life right here at my house. I would say that first of all, it's such an interesting year for students all over and just the timing and rhythm of school in itself. So just to kind of restate what we've already said. So if you have bipolar illness, there isn't anything more important than getting a consistent amount of sleep. Really not getting that amount of sleep can really drive kind of that illness and make things much worse. And then I would just, so because of that, I would reiterate what we have said previously, that keeping a regular sleep-wake schedule, staying on your medications if you have a bipolar illness is going to be incredibly important, keeping a sleep diary. That's a sleep-wake diary that says when you fell asleep, when you woke up. There's a ton of applications these days, from watches to phones where you don't have to have your phone on, but you can leave it on the bed, which can help track your sleep-wake cycle. And you can share with your physician or psychiatrist to talk about that, so you can really follow that closely. But then to do all those things that Dr. Vidovanovic was just sharing, that so we're getting up at the same time. When you get up, to go out and have natural light, to get some exercise, and to keep that consistency going, even if you don't have to get up. And boy, that's a tough thing to say to a 16-year-old, I know. But to get up at the same time every day, even if your class doesn't start until noon now, I think would be very important. And to keep your spirits up, enjoy yourself.
We'll go to Janet in Brunswick. Hi, Janet. Go ahead.
Hi. You brought up a moment ago about the light boxes for seasonal affective disorder.
Yes.
I'm wondering if your guests could speak to the matter that in some light boxes, the range of the high blue light, high energy blue light, is part of that and should not be because of macular degeneration that can come from using those. It's a fine point, I know, but...
Okay, yeah, Dr. Vidovanovic, if you've heard this program and you're thinking about purchasing a light box, what kind of guidance would you give our listeners?
Excellent question. I think that phototherapy or light therapy has been really utilized widely in sleep medicine and psychiatry, and I think it's going to find way in other medical areas as well. I would say that the light therapy in general, it's a very safe intervention for from the ophthalmological, from the eye health perspective. There are many of these light therapy devices that are available on the market. When we think about light box, one needs to think about the intensity of the light that we need to be exposed to, and usually the studies have utilized intensity anywhere between 5 and 10,000 lux. Lux is the unit that measures that intensity of the light. And also, there are boxes that emit different spectral properties of light. I think it's okay to get a light box that is a very bright white light that has a wide spectral properties. More recently, there is emphasis on a green, blue and a green spectrum of light, and there are devices that emit specifically those wavelength frequencies. In my mind, getting just a regular bright white light box would really suffice. I think it's okay to use some of those blue / green enriched wavelengths that are being emitted from the box. In terms of the safety, I always, as a physician, really I'm on a conservative side, right? So I always exercise caution. So if patients have certain eye conditions, and even if they are exposed to certain medications that can be photosensitizing, one should exercise certain amount of caution when approaching a light therapy as intervention. And if there is eye pathology that patients are aware of, I would suggest they consult with their ophthalmologist, their optometrist, just to gauge safety of using a light box. But in general, it's widely used, it's safe. I'd probably start with a box that emit white, bright light at the intensity of anywhere between 5 to 10,000 lux, and use it probably for about 30 minutes a day.
All right, Janet, thank you, sir, for your question. An email here from Phil. I'm a firefighter that works 24-hour shifts on 2 days a week with a day off in between. When we try to sleep at night, we may get to sleep the whole night or we may get calls all night, leaving us drained the next day. What's the best way to recover from this sleep deprivation cycle. And Dr. McCarley, there's so many frontline workers that are not able to have that typical sleep cycle.
Yeah, boy, that's a tough question. Shift work, whether people work third shift or kind of the type of shift work that you're describing there, which are 24 hours on and then a number of hours off. Boy, those are tough things. And hats off to those folks who are doing that. What I would say is as much consistency that you can introduce into your sleep is ultimately what I would recommend. I think it's always better if you can sleep at night. So if you have to be up for 24 hours, you have to be up for 24 hours. There's not much you can do about that. But if you have an opportunity then to get your sleep and to get it in the evening, I think that is the typical preference. People tend to sleep better, and it tends to consolidate their sleep so that when they have their day off, that they're able to still go out in the daytime and then sleep at night. So many people who work evenings, when they finally do get a time off, that, you know, the problem in the real world is everyone you know is up during the daytime. So obviously there's a huge draw to volitionally make yourself stay up to go see people, and then it can throw off that sleep-wake cycle again. So you want to make up that sleep deficit, meaning get as much sleep as you can, and I would try to get it in the evenings if you can do that, and to pick a consistent time. But I'll say, I don't know, Dr. Vidanovic, I'm not getting your name exactly right either. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that one.
Sure, and I want to add to that as well. Bethany on Facebook writes, my wife is a paramedic firefighter, already has inconsistent sleep schedule. She has used melatonin in the past, but it seems to be not as effective anymore. Is it possible melatonin can interfere with our natural sleep cycle? So I'm going to add that to the question, Dr. Vidanovic.
Sure. So I think managing these shift workers and their sleep is quite challenging. I would say that melatonin can be quite helpful in managing challenges with the shift work, but also appropriate light exposure is very relevant. For example, if a nurse is leaving a hospital in the early morning hours, really that's a not good time for that person to be exposed to a lot of bright light, because bright light can at that time negatively affect her cycle, believe it or not. So it's a very complex physiology. Melatonin, I would suggest, can be very useful if used in a small amounts. For example, after a shift where individual was awake during the entire night, like many health workers are these days in the hospital, melatonin in a small dosages, 1 to 3 milligrams, can be very helpful in inducing sleep during the daytime. It can be a recovery sleep, which can be hardly achieved maybe without a melatonin. So I think that it's a complex topic, and I think it really deserves a solid consultation with a sleep clinician to go over all these dynamic and nuances, when to take melatonin, when not to expose yourself to light, when to give yourself extra light, and you will be surprised how with these behavioral modifications that are complex prevent me from discussing them in a detail due to timing issues we have. But I think a lot can be achieved in melatonin and a light cycling for shift workers and for their good night of sleep.
All right. We have so many questions coming in. I'm going to try to get to as many as possible. Melinda in Yarmouth, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Jennifer. I'm calling to see, first of all, if your experts have seen an increase in children with sleep problems due to and I'm not talking about high school kids. My grandson is 9, and my daughter had a really hard time with him at the beginning of this year when school just shut down. You know, his social life and everything that goes with it with school stopped abruptly. And then they were, you know, transitioned almost immediately into on-school learning.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult for my grandson to fall asleep at night. He was anxious about the COVID because that's all they heard about.
Right. Melinda, we're so close on time. I'm going to let Dr. McCarley answer your question. Are you seeing this with younger children?
Yes. So there's a short answer. I think you highlighted all the reasons. It's an anxious time for kids as well as adults. Their routines have been thrown off. And with that, we're seeing an increase in anxiety and for some kids, depression, especially with that social isolation. And associated with that, there are some sleeping difficulties which come. So the short answer is yes. And the things to do are just everything we've talked about, reinforcing good sleep hygiene, good sleep habits, comforting them when they can, and doing as much you can to support them through this.
All right, Melinda, then, thank you. And I'm going to try to squeeze.
Oh, yeah. Screen time and gaming.
That's right.
The roof, right, when we are containing in the house.
I can't believe we made it this far without talking about screens. Annie, I want to squeeze you in because you have a question that hasn't come up yet, and I know a lot of people have it. Go ahead, but ask it quickly, please.
Great. Hi. I just wanted to call about, I use an Aura to track my sleep, and what I have noticed that along with the Aura, I've done things like no screen time before bed. I read before bed. I go to bed at the same time. It's a dark room. So all those things have really helped me to improve my sleep, and I'm getting really good sleep scores, but I'm also noticing in the breakdown that I'm awake, you know, usually between 3 and 4 for about an hour, and then I'm looking at the like deep sleep and light sleep, and I'm trying to improve my deep sleep. But is it common, you know, and sometimes when you're up between 3 and 4, you think, oh, my God, I was up all night. And it really
sure.
is maybe like 53 minutes.
Great. I'm going to go quickly to Dr. Vidinovich. Two things. What do you think of sleep tracking devices? And two, are they showing us that being up for a little bit in the middle of the night is okay?
Well, I would say, you know, I personally don't pay attention a lot to these sleeping tracking devices. A lot of patients are telling me I did well. They tell me score is 95. I really have no idea what to make of that score. If you want to take a look at these, I think that's fine. Don't obsess over the scores that you get. As long as you are refreshed and feel that you got a good night of sleep, and you'd be surprised how frequently our patients have a misperception of their nighttime of sleep. Some of them tell me, Doc, I usually sleep 2 hours a night. We bring them to the sleep laboratory. They have beautiful 7 hours of sleep. So sleep trackers, I personally don't obsess over them. And as long as you have a good night time with your sleep, it's fine. You slept all your life without these tracking devices, so it's okay to continue without them. If you want to use them, I have nothing against it, but there are limitations of it.
All right. And I so appreciate you bringing that up, Annie. And that's going to have to be our last question. So many people have questions. Such an important topic. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you, Dr. McCarley and Dr. Vidinovich, for being on our program today. Dr. Alexander Vidinovich is Director of Sleep Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital. Dr. Robert McCarley is VP of Medical Affairs for Intensive Services at Maine Behavioral Healthcare and Spring Harbor Hospital. Today's sound engineer was Lucy Suchek. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.